I'm Brandi Cruz. Welcome to Undivided on this Monday. What a fabulous Monday it is. I don't know why I'm in such a good mood today. That's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, I just woke up and usually on Mondays it's such a bummer, but I'm in a great mood. Lots to talk about today, an interview heavy show for you. Oh, and thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give Common Sense a comeback. If I don't say that, I feel like we can't truly start the show. Undivided is presented by our founding sponsor, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. And we're making a big push for new subscribers before we hit our one-year mark. So if you've been listening on the podcast or maybe watching this on YouTube and you like the show, consider supporting the show so we can not only continue to do this work, but we can grow this mission and this movement. I'm looking to hire some people in the new year, so that would certainly assist with it. You can support the show at patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandicruz.locals.com. You can do that for as little as $5 a month. And I sure would appreciate you joining our circle of subscribers. All right, coming up today, an update on the cease and desist letters being sent to the Tiffany Smiley for Senate camp over alleged trademark infringement. I'll update you on some things that happened over the weekend and where stuff stands. Plus, a soccer player's beliefs are being corrected, I guess is an okay way to say it, by his team after he shared his concern, or seemingly shared his concern on social media, over gender fluidity being kind of forced on our children, despite what children's parents might want. And finally, one of Washington's, would you be surprised to know, one of Washington's largest, and perhaps the largest homeless camp in the entire state, actually isn't in the Seattle area. It's all the way across the state in the city of Spokane, and there exists there the political will to remove it. Only there's one problem. It's not on Spokane city property. It's not on county property. It's on property owned by the state of Washington, which is presenting a unique challenge. The mayor of Spokane will join us to discuss. I do want to start, though, with the Smiley situation, the Tiffany Smiley situation. So on Friday's show, we discussed at length about the fact that Starbucks, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Seattle Times have all, in the last month, sent the Tiffany Smiley camp cease and desist letters for, they say, violating their trademarks by using their corporate logos in her campaign ads. So there was one ad where Tiffany Smiley is standing in front of a closed-down Starbucks, and you can kind of barely see the backwards Starbucks sign in the background, and Starbucks saying, you can't do that. And then in that same ad, the Seattle Times is saying, you can't use our logo in those headlines that she put on screen because they say it could suggest an endorsement. And then in a different ad called Game Day, you see Tiffany Smiley's husband for all of 2 seconds wearing a Seahawks jersey that the Seahawks gave him when he raised the 12th man flag. And he raised the 12th man flag because they were honoring his service to our country as the first blind active duty military officer. So I want to be clear, and at the end of the show, I'll read some comments about sort of my commentary on all of this situation. I want to be clear. Companies have every right to protect their brand, and that's why laws like that exist. And, you know, if they want to protect it sort of here and there and whatever, fine. I mean, do what you want to do. All I want is for them to be honest about it. You know, over the weekend, a couple things happened. So, you know, one of the things I said on Friday is, yeah, you know, Starbucks and the Seahawks, they have a right to protect their brand. I just find it a little bit petty. You know, in the ad about the closed Starbucks, for instance, Tiffany Smiley, you know, doesn't say the word Starbucks, and you can barely see the sign behind her. And I also think, shouldn't Starbucks be happy that a candidate is finally paying attention to the crime crisis that has forced them to close multiple locations of theirs across the country? Instead, they're sort of trying to silence her in a way. So over the weekend, the Seattle Seahawks, someone sent me the fact that Tara Simmons, who's a Democratic state representative, you might know her name because she's the first formerly incarcerated person elected to the state house. And I think she has really a tremendous story, but she's also proposed some controversial things. She was the member of the state house who proposed that bill that would have lowered the penalty for drive-by shooters who kill someone. Well, she took to Facebook on Friday and put out on her campaign Facebook page what amounted to, it sounded to me or to any layperson, like an endorsement from the Seahawks. She said, and again, this is on the Re-Elect Tara Simmons page, hanging out with the Seahawks today and got their overwhelming support for my work to advance racial and social justice. It was the validation I needed when my opponent has turned negative in desperation and spreads fake news, blah, blah, blah. And she's got pictures with Seahawks players and their logo everywhere. And so I reached out to the Seahawks again, like, hey, why can she do this, but Tiffany Smiley can't? And again, there might be legitimate explanations for this. Maybe the Seahawks have endorsed her, and so they don't mind their logo being used because they have endorsed her, but just say so. You know, it's the lack of information that is just a bad look, and I think a bad look for the team. And so to me and to some fans, it might look like, well, the team supports this woman who wants, you know, drive-by shooters to get out of prison early, but they are not supporting a blind Army veteran who they gave a jersey to, and it just all seems political. And so, you know, I've now sent the Seahawks organization 2 emails, have not heard back from them on either fronts. So you're only left to sort of guess. And I also was sent just this morning an ad from an Alaska, the race for governor in Alaska, named the candidate's name is Vicky Cayetano. And she lost in the Democratic primary, but somebody pointed out that she ran ads with her in a Russell Wilson jersey. And look, the Seahawks might not have seen that. But again, it just comes down to, I want more information from them. Just be transparent. Like, explain why Tiffany Smiley can't have her husband in an ad for 2 seconds, but someone like Tara Simmons, a Democrat, can, you know, post this whole thing on social media. And I will say, and I haven't heard back from the Starbucks organization either, and my question to them was basically like, isn't this a little petty? have you sent out or had to send out notices like this in the past? And then, you know, the Seattle Times. The Seattle Times, to me, is the most concerning one because as a news organization, I think they have even more of a responsibility to apply their trademark fairly, especially when it comes to politics and to elections. It is very clear that it's so common for candidates to use headlines from the news in their ads. And that's what Tiffany Smiley did here. And the Times says that it gave the wrong impression that they had endorsed her, which to me, I didn't take that as an endorsement at all. It was just some headlines about crime. And so I had asked, you know, Seattle Times sent me an initial statement and I sent back 2 very obvious follow-ups, which was, how did that come across as an endorsement? And then the second follow-up, which I believe is the most important, is why did the Times allow Patty Murray to use its logo in their ad, in her ads in 2016? And again, there could be a perfectly reasonable explanation. For instance, the headlines that Patty Murray used were actually about her, were actually about Patty Murray's work, as opposed to the headlines that Tiffany Smiley used, which were about a news story. And so certainly that could be the reason the Seattle Times was fine with one and not the other. But when I asked those follow-up questions, they just responded that they weren't going to comment any further. And then the Seattle Times, David Gubman over at the Times, released his own, they put out an own article in the newsroom about the entire situation. And this entire article from David Gubman fails to answer the most obvious question, which is, why was Patty Murray allowed to do it, but Tiffany Smiley is not? That's a fair question. It's a journalistic question. And again, if there's an obvious answer, if there's a relevant explanation, just explain it. In the media, we demand transparency from everyone. Why don't we expect transparency from ourselves? So I really wish the Seattle Times, and I'm taping the show early today because I have to travel for a speaking engagement. And so certainly if the Seattle Times ends up clarifying things, sending me a statement, I will update it for all of you. But it's just like a news organization. You're about transparency from every single person. You should be about transparency from yourself. I'm absolutely open to an explanation for all of these things that isn't about politics, but you can't just, even if it seems obvious to the Seattle Times, why they allowed one or not the other. It doesn't seem obvious to me. I imagine it doesn't seem obvious to a lot of people who are watching. So just lay it out for me like a 5-year-old. Treat me like a 5-year-old and just explain it to me so I can explain it to all of you. So there was a story that I missed in September, and I don't know how I missed it. Like, was I living under a rock? It was from my friend Jason Rantz. There's an update to it today, and that's why I'm going to discuss it now. But so there is a player for the Seattle Sounders, the soccer team, who got in a little bit of trouble for posting this. A cartoon where it's got, you know, what I imagine are some parents, you know, tied up by this TV, and then these rainbows are coming out of the TV into the brains of these kids. And then the TV is handing the girl a pair of jeans and the boy a skirt. And so clearly it's sort of a cartoon about you know, gender fluidity and gender identity issues just sort of being forced into the mind of children. And I support trans rights. I do believe, though, that you have this sort of groupthink that's happening where more and more kids, you know, there's shows on TV called like, God, what is the one from Disney or Discovery or something where it's about like teens competing in drag shows and stuff like that. And you've got all these like drag shows for kids across the country. And so anyway, this is just the opinion of this soccer player. Well, apparently his coach did not think his opinion was correct and vowed that the organization would sit him down and tell him why his opinion was not correct.
What did you make of Xavi Arrieta had a post on social media yesterday that he ended up taking down and apologizing for? What did you make of that whole situation?
Well, you want my personal answer or the club answer?
Personal answer.
Okay, personal answer, I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it at all. I mean, people are who they are. It's not TV trying to brainwash people. I don't know who that guy was that he took the quote from, but I personally don't agree with it. From a club standpoint, I'll answer that one too. I mean, look, a lot of people were hurt about that Instagram post, and they have a right to be hurt. And Javi apologized, and when he comes back, I will have a good conversation with him, okay? Try and help him out. And then we also, within the club, have a really good social, you know, equity network, and he'll sit down with them and talk things through and just make sure he understands that what he said wasn't correct.
So anyway, Jason Rantz kind of detailed this story in his reporting. Jason Rantz, our friend of the show, but also a conservative radio host in Seattle on 770 KTTH. Well, the head coach of the Seattle Sounders has responded to some of Jason's criticism of how the team handled this. And I'm going to let Jason explain. Jason Rantz, welcome back to Undivided. First, I am not a big soccer person, but I know you are a big soccer fan. So can you tell me, is this player a good player? Big deal?
I mean, I don't know if I would call him a big deal. He's a very good defender. He is a member of the Ecuadorian national team, so he's reached some level of talent. He is a core member of the Seattle Sounders.
So before we get to kind of the update and what's transpired, I told you, I didn't know how I missed your original story. What really struck me about it is the language that the head coach used when he talked about how he said, and this is the quote, that we also within the club have a really good social equity network, and he'll sit down with them and talk things through and just make sure he understands that what he said wasn't correct. What were your thoughts when you, as even just as a Sounders fan, heard the coach say that?
Well, I take this as not a Sounders fan per se, because my initial reaction was, how dare you? Who the hell are you to tell a player what political position they hold is or is not, quote unquote, correct? This is a team that takes political positions all the time, and they allow their players to take positions all the time. And I don't recall ever hearing Brian Schnetzer or anyone in the front office stepping in and saying, hey, Stephen Fry, goalkeeper, how dare you send that meme in support of abortion services? They would never do that because that is a left-wing viewpoint that he espoused. In this case, it's perceived as conservative with Arrieta. I don't think that this is a conservative position. I think people, regardless of how they identify politically, probably agree more with the cartoon that Arrieta posted than not. There is a small faction of very far to the left fans of the Sounders who are Antifa sympathizers. They will take any position that a conservative doesn't. They'll take the opposite. They do this all the time. And so for them to come out there and claim that this comic was violence and how over the top it was, how dare he post this transphobic piece? And then, of course, the Seattle Times in their coverage implies that the cartoon is transphobic, which, again, it is not. It is a mainstream position. You can disagree with it. Go for it. I don't care if you agree or disagree. But the idea that the coach is going to come in and basically say, we're going to sit him down and tell him why his position is wrong. I mean, that the left loves to talk about power structure and power dynamics. Well, you've got a coach who's white, who's going up to the Ecuadorian and telling the person of color who during Latinx Heritage Month that the Sounders decided to change from Hispanic Heritage Month. I just thought was too far. It was absurd.
And now Schmetzger, you told me, you know, did a subsequent interview and tried to walk back those comments as if they weren't really going to correct his way of thinking.
Exactly. So he walked back the substance of his claims where he was going to sit him down. Now, that's public. Now, privately, I have no idea what's going on. But publicly, he basically said, oh, no, we're not going to try to re-educate him. We just want him to know that how when you post something political on social media, both sides of an issue will react strongly. And we just want to make sure that he's prepared for that, because he was a little thrown aback at how some people took the cartoon. So obviously, almost complete opposite of what Schmetzer said originally. And the only thing that changed in between those two press conferences was my coverage, both on KTTH.com on the radio and, of course, on TV.
And we'll get to that in a moment, because he responds directly to you without saying your
yes,
name.
Yes, he does.
Arriaga, how did he respond to the criticism? Like you said, there were some fans who were saying that he should be off the team for this, that it was it amounted to violence. How did he respond to it?
He posted kind of an apology, saying it wasn't his intent to hurt anyone's feelings with this position, but he didn't make anything of it. He pretty much thought that it was a mainstream comic that was espousing a view that isn't controversial. So he did a little bit of an apology. We haven't heard directly from him since he made this apology. At least I haven't seen any of the quotes yet. English is not his first language, so it was in a little bit of broken English, the apology, but I think it was pretty clear his intent wasn't to just offend people on the left.
Yeah, and as you've pointed out, this organization has allowed people to share its opinions before.
All the time.
And so that's the issue here, is sort of that you can share opinions on one side, but you can't share opinions on the other, and you'll be told it's not correct, which feels so un-American to me.
Well, just condescending. Again, this is the team that loves to be woke, but this is the white dude with power telling the Ecuadorian to shut up or just take his own position. I just think that on its surface is a slap in the face to the tolerance that you claim to hold.
Yeah, it's hypocrisy. So Brian Schmetzer was asked about your coverage of this. I'm going to play this clip quickly.
Just to clarify, was he sent to re-education camp?
No. I mean, there's a reason why he's on Tucker Carlson. Let's be honest.
Just feel like it would be worth clarifying.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, let's move past it. I don't want to talk about him because he's going to like that we're talking about him.
Right, I know.
Do you like that he's talking about you, Jason Rantz?
Oh, yes. You know what I'm desperate for is the coach of a team talking about me at a press conference that pretty much no one saw. That is what I'm just jonesing for every single day. And he's right. There is a reason why I'm on Tucker Carlson Tonight, the most watched cable news show in the history of cable broadcasting. And I would say there's probably a reason why his team, for the first time in MLS history, didn't make the playoffs this year. So just throwing that out there. I love that he thinks it's an insult, by the way. That you're not insulting me by telling me that I go on Tucker Carlson. You're insulting me in the sense that you think that it is beneath people to go on a show like that because he's a conservative, right? I mean, this again plays into the whole intolerance coming from the Sounders front office.
On a more broad note, more broadly, before this segment, we talked about, you know, the latest on the Tiffany Smiley situation with the with Starbucks and the Seattle Seahawks. And the question of whether it's political, and then you look at this with the Seattle Sounders and sort of politics clearly playing a role in the team's response to a player. What would your advice be to these clubs, the Seahawks and the Sounders, when it comes to their forays into politics?
I generally think, regardless of the political positions, from a club standpoint, shut up. This is not the world that you should be diving into, because you're going to unintentionally create conflict. At the end of the day, I think it's best to just focus on sports, because that's what we go to you for. Now, if you are going to get into the world of politics, okay, fine. But you're going to have to be honest and open about it, and you're going to have to treat both sides like they deserve respect, because they do. We live in a country, including a city, that still is supposed to value both sides of a conversation, and we don't want to create this echo chamber. If you are so confident about the political positions that you hold close to your heart, then you can defend them, and you'd be okay with someone saying that you're wrong.
You heard it here, the advice from Jason Rantz, very deep, very profound. Just shut up.
Clearly. Yeah, just shut up.
All right, Jason Rantz, good stuff. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brandon.
And, you know, just to kind of put a bow on that conversation, You know, I think as a team, when you start to decide what extreme views are, I think that's when you get into trouble. I mean, no one is saying that, like, if a player came out and wore a swastika or was doing a Nazi salute on the field, that that would be something the team should speak out about. And I think that's why you just get out of the politics of it altogether. Because, as Jason said, I don't think this particular cartoon was an extreme view. I can see how some people disagree with it, but the idea that kids are sort of being exposed to these ideas of gender fluidity in a way that, you know, for their adolescent brains might convince them that they're transgender when they're actually not, and then, you know, they might take some sort of steps that are hard to correct in adulthood. There are a lot of Americans who have that view. And so when you get into, as a ball club, deciding what's extreme, what's correct, and what's incorrect, that's where you get into trouble. So best to just stay out of it. Or, as Jason said, more bluntly, just shut up. The following segment is brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action by signing up at future42.org. Would it surprise you that the largest or one of the largest homeless camps in the entire state of Washington is not in the Seattle area? It's actually all the way on the other side of the state in Spokane. It's a camp called Camp Hope, which I don't know about that name for a homeless camp. I can't say that homeless camps are places filled with hope. But anyway, it has about 600 people. And what's interesting about this is there's certainly the political will in Spokane to clear it. I mean, you know, you're talking about a Republican mayor, certainly a sheriff who has said that he is going to come in and clear the camp by mid-October. But the challenge is that this camp actually is not on city property or county property. It's on property owned by the Washington State Department of Transportation. And so you have a very challenging situation where you're in a much different political climate than Seattle. There's the will to remove it. There's the will to make sure that Spokane doesn't turn into, you know, a Seattle when it comes to the homeless crisis. But in this particular instance, Spokane Mayor Nadine Woodward says their hands are kind of tied. Mayor Woodward, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you. Great to be here.
For people who aren't familiar, just explain Camp Hope. What is it?
Camp Hope is a very large encampment on Washington transportation property. It's the first such state-owned right-of-way encampment that we have had. It started at the end of last year as a, I would say, a protest by a homeless advocate who runs a nonprofit and was unhappy with their perceived lack of enough low barrier shelter space within our regional shelter system. So that protest started outside of City Hall and then was moved in December to the WashDOT property along Interstate 90, east of our downtown area. And populated to the point where we've been told, or it's been reported, that it is 600 plus individuals on one city-sized lot owned by WashDOT property, WashDOT department.
I've heard it said that it's the largest homeless encampment in the state. Do you dispute that?
I don't know how large the other encampments are on the west side of Washington, up and down the I-5 corridor. The only thing I know is it is large and it is our first.
What are some challenges that have come along with it?
Many challenges have come with this encampment, and at the cost of our city taxpayers. We have been in negotiations for many, many months with WashDOT on mitigating those impacts. Public safety, public health are just some of them. We as a city are paying for the garbage removal Monday through Friday. We are paying for private security and for police overtime of 12 hours every single day at a cost of almost $500,000. We've also met continuously with neighbors and businesses around the encampment who have suffered greatly. We have a business complex that has had more than $100,000 in damage and property damage done there. A number of other businesses. We have a very large construction project that's going on just a block away, and that contractor has threatened to walk off the job because of property theft and threats to his employees. So it just numerous impacts. The calls, the police calls to that property continue to rise every single month that they have been there. So it has been a great strain to city resources and services, and certainly a great impact to the neighborhood and the businesses around it.
Why is the city footing the bill for garbage removal and security? Is it just if the city won't, the state won't?
The state won't. The state has not been amenable to that. And so we had to step in and provide safety to those who are in the encampment, certainly, as well as those around it.
You know, the governor has been talking about, as some, I'm not going to name names, well, I'll name the governor's name, they make a complete 180 on public safety. The governor has come out and kind of touted renewed efforts from WashDOT to remove these encampments along our highways. Have you seen any difference as the governor has changed his tune on that and spoken about it publicly? Have you seen a difference with WashDOT's willingness to work with you on it?
Not necessarily. The latest ask we've had is for Washington State Patrol to be able to join us in providing public safety measures to that encampment. We've asked, we provide police overtime from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And we have asked WSP to come in and provide the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. Part of that. And so far that they have not been agreeable to that. So what little we have asked just has not been met with any support.
From their perspective, what does the State Department of Transportation tell you in regard to not coming in and clearing the camp away?
Well, we don't have enough beds for every single individual in that encampment. And as it has been allowed to grow to the point, if it is really 600 individuals, we did submit a plan to Commerce when it was brought to our attention back in May that the state legislature had allocated funds to help with these encampments to move individuals out and into housing rapidly. We found out that we were eligible for $24 million. So we met as a county with the city of Spokane, the county and the city Spokane Valley, and our regional partners to meet that 30-day deadline to come up with a plan to house 600-plus individuals. And we submitted that plan July 31st, and very little movement has been made on the state's part to engage in that plan and move people into housing. We just opened 3.5 weeks ago, the city did, a new, large, low-barrier shelter on the east side of town where we can house hundreds of individuals. And we had hoped that Commerce would see that as an option for many of these individuals and help fund that alongside with us. And we just finally got them to agree to reimburse the city for costs of any individuals from that encampment that we can identify as going to the shelter. So there's been a little bit of movement on helping us with that, but we have heard very little from them on the plan that we've submitted. There was one hotel that was it is being purchased right now by Catholic Charities. It is a Quality Inn on the west side of town that Commerce directly allocated to purchase that building, but it takes 60 days to turn that around and make it available for those who need housing. So we're looking for help from Commerce. We have a lot of people here. And that encampment needs to close before our winter weather sets in. We have lots of cold temperatures in the winter, snow, and we want to make sure that those individuals have a more humane and compassionate place than a city lot with hundreds of them on there in tents in temperatures that are below freezing. And we do have some options right now that we can expend, and we have not, I don't think it's been supported by Commerce.
Just to be clear, so since it's state property, to what extent are you hamstrung on being able to make any decisions about it?
Because it's state property, we cannot trespass individuals off of that property. During the heat wave, there was a large tent that was erected that Commerce said was illegal and was trespassing, but they wouldn't permit it, and we couldn't permit it because it was illegal. So that's been something that we've been challenged with as well. So we're just continuing to move forward on this.
And so the city of Spokane cannot go sweep the, you don't have the legal authority to remove any camps or tents or people from there.
We are engaging in an abatement process to do that.
Okay.
The city did notify the structure that was put up on the washed out property that we would go through the abatement process. The county is now doing that as well.
So if the city had control over this area and sole decision-making, would you have been able to sweep it and clear it by now? Because I know there are some federal court rulings around, you know, not being able to remove someone from public property unless there's a shelter to go to. You mentioned that there's concerns there's not enough shelter. So would the city, even if they had full control over it, been able to do more than the state has done?
Absolutely. I mean, we would have been able to expand our shelter system before it got to the point where there were 600 individuals to move people from that encampment and into emergency shelter.
Explain
but now
that
when you've got 600 individuals, it makes it a lot harder.
Okay. So if the city had been in control of it, you wouldn't have let it get to that point, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Sheriff Ozzy, who is quite the character out there, I think everybody just calls him Sheriff Ozzy because I do not know how to pronounce his last name to this day. He has come out with some pretty assertive statements on that camp. And WashDOT kind of responded to some recent statements he made. And WashDOT says that his comments are not in the spirit, the same spirit as conversations between the state and the city. Do you agree with that? Do you think that he's helping or hurting the situation?
Well, I know that he has talked to a lot of the neighbors and businesses around the encampment, and he wants to be able to do something before winter sets in, which is really what our goal is as well. You know, he has provided us a little bit of leverage to be able to have that conversation of what's the deadline here. I know that the commerce plan was to move people out of these encampments and into housing rapidly, but what is the expectation to the campers and to the community? In this plan, this has been going on for 10 months at this particular location, and this community wants to know, as well as myself, what's the deadline to move individuals out of this encampment into housing? And we haven't gotten that yet. Well, now the sheriff has put out a deadline, and we are working to meet that deadline to make sure that when that deadline comes, that we will have an option for those individuals to move out of tents in an unsafe, uncompassionate environment and into emergency sheltering, which is a safe bed, a roof over their head, access to meals and to services. We can continue to do assessments for those individuals to see what types of housing needs they have while they are in a shelter. And they can be in a safe place in a shelter while they are waiting for those housing options to open up for them. Where they are now is just not humane.
I was reading the statement that WashDOT put out in response to the sheriff, and they said that they're meeting with city officials, which I'm assuming maybe includes you or at least your staffers, was a start to a productive, much needed discussion to successfully resolve Camp Hope. That's their characterization of your conversations today. Productive, working towards a resolution. Do you feel the same way? Would you characterize those discussions in the same way?
Well, we do have the right people at the table. So we have WSP, we have Commerce, we have the Attorney General's Office, we have Commerce, we have the city, we have the county, we have law enforcement. So we have the right partners at the table. We have not been able, though, yet to come to a deadline. And I think that's what people want more than ever, is to hear, when is this encampment going to be decommissioned? And what are the assurances from the state that it will not, a new one will not pop up there and be allowed to populate to the level that we've seen here in Spokane.
In mentioning some of the comments made by the sheriff, he is saying that he wants to have a full investigation and an audit of money that went, that's tied to this. He said, quote, "I will seek an audit of WashDOT, the state of Washington, and the city of Spokane in their funding of Jewel's Helping Hands for the operations at this camp and other homeless camps within the greater Spokane area. I intend to conduct a full investigation into potential fraud related to this funding." What is he talking about? Is the city of Spokane involved in fraudulent funding?
No, not at all. But listen, we're open to any investigation that the sheriff thinks it fits this situation, we will be cooperative with that. If he has any questions on the city's role in any of this, but I invite any investigation that he feels is necessary.
Have you spoken to him about that, though? I mean, he's saying he's going to contact the FBI with respect to possible public corruption and the misuse of public funds. It sounds very serious. Have you spoken to the sheriff?
He informed me that he was going to pursue this investigation, and that was the extent of our conversation.
Do you think it's, I mean, how's your relationship if he's threatening to contact the FBI about possible public corruption and he's listing the city of Spokane as a possible culprit?
Yeah, I'm not sure about to what degree he's including the city on that. But like I said, if he wants to open an investigation into money spent regarding this encampment and the people involved, I absolutely would support that.
You know, just on a broader scale, I guess I was surprised. I hadn't heard about this camp until recently. And I guess I was kind of surprised because, you know, we've got a crazy homeless crisis in Seattle that is not getting any better. And I guess, you know, there is a tendency to sort of blame it on liberal cities and liberal jurisdictions where we see these crises like up and down the West Coast. But Spokane isn't a liberal jurisdiction. What's contributing to the homelessness crisis there?
Well, we really are a regional hub for homeless services. The city of Spokane is for a very large geographic region. And we have the shelters in the city. We have all of the resources in the city. And so we do get a lot of individuals from outside of Spokane and Spokane County who come here to access our services. The pandemic definitely had an impact on homeless populations. I think most cities have seen the numbers of homeless during this pandemic increase. We are no different. But I also believe that state policy does play a role in all of this, especially when it comes to these encampments that we're specifically talking about. Encampments that are allowed to happen on state property and allowed to grow to the extent that we have seen here. Now, whether or not this encampment was organically populated or not, that's a big question mark for me, but I have heard in the past, and I've seen in emails, that the nonprofit that is managing this encampment, Jules Helping Hands, now that commerce money is coming to play in Spokane County, has basically said, I deserve some of that money because we wouldn't be getting this money if it wasn't for this protest and this encampment, which I orchestrated.
So that might speak to what the sheriff is talking about in his belief that there might be some misuse of funding, it sounds like.
We'll see.
On a broader scale, you mentioned, and you make a good point, you know, you're not a liberal city, but we are in a liberal state that has shown incapable of really dealing with the mental health crisis and certainly the public safety crisis in a meaningful way. They have a session coming up in a couple months. What are some things you think could be done at the state level to help cities across the state deal with these issues like homelessness, like drug abuse, like public safety?
Well, local governments need a lot more help from the state. And whether that's funding, which we're finally now getting commerce to come to the table to address this in a way that can help cities make an impact. But when it comes to crime, especially the reform measures, police reform measures that were passed in 2021, that are making it extremely difficult for our police officers to do their job. Tools have been taken away. Drugs have been decriminalized. We have a real problem with our jail system. We are losing space within the jail. We have staffing shortages. One of the measures that was passed in the police reform legislation year was that now the training for people who work in the jails and corrections, it's going from 4 weeks to 10 weeks of training. People don't want to be away from their families that long. That training is only offered on the in Burien. And so families on the east side, they don't want to be that far away from their loved ones when they go to this training. It's costing cities more to get these individuals trained. So we need to do something better. We need to have alternatives to jail when that is a reasonable alternative. But we have created an environment of legislated lawlessness where we have criminals on the street that know that officers cannot pursue them, even if they are a known suspect, that if they openly use and possess on the streets drugs, nothing's going to happen to them, that there are very little consequences, and there's no room in the jail for them. We, for the first time this summer, had one of our own officers, a veteran officer, targeted in a drive-by shooting, almost lost his life, inches away from losing his life. That's never happened in our city. This is a very dangerous environment for our men and women in blue to be working in. And the things that are happening at the state level are making that environment much more dangerous.
Well, Mayor, we appreciate your time. And the timeline again for Camp Hope, it's mid-October. Is that what the sheriff has said? Or has he pushed it to November?
Well, I've asked for a little more time. November 10th is his deadline. And that's to meet the abatement process that will go through the court here in Superior Court in Spokane County. So we'll see. It's a 20-day process and another 5 days for the hearing. And that gives us some time to make sure that we have expanded capacity in our regional shelter system to offer these individuals a better way out, not a winter in an encampment, which is brutal here in Eastern Washington, but to access space that is safe for them so that they can be assessed and connected to services and to the housing that we hope to get them into.
And do you feel confident on that timeline that you won't just, like Seattle does, push the problem around from place to place?
Well, we can't force people into shelter. That's always a challenge. But part of that will be to make it, I think really when the cold weather sets in, more of those people will be motivated to move into something safer and warmer.
All right, Mayor Woodward, we appreciate your insight on this, and I wish your city the best in dealing with it. It's not the easiest situation to try to confront.
It's an incredibly complex challenge, and if we could have solved this a long time ago, we all would have. It's going to take time. It took us time to get to this point, and it's going to take time to get us on the other side of this and move the needle.
And it certainly raises questions about the larger issue of camps that pop up on along highways or sometimes under highways. We've seen that in Seattle. And you could have all the political will in the world in a particular jurisdiction to clean it up. But if it comes down to the state, certainly there doesn't exist the same level of political will at the state level and certainly at the governor's office to do these things with haste. The previous segment was brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, we'll end the show on Monday, as we always do, with some comments. I got some. There was the story about Tiffany Smiley and the cease and desist letters being sent to the Tiffany Smiley campaign from the Seahawks and Starbucks and the Seattle Times got a lot of traction over the weekend. And it was like, I mean, it's so funny. When I read comments on Twitter, it's always people who are angry at me. And then I read comments on Facebook or Patreon and Locals, and it's like completely different. Let's dive into Twitter comments, shall we? One individual writing, a private company can choose what type of person or organization uses their image or likeness or brand. Forcing a company to have to let any and all is a bit fascist, but it's the GOP brand these days. DeSantis went after companies in Florida because they didn't agree with him. That's true. And if you recall, and if this person actually listened to the Undivided podcast, they would have heard that I criticized DeSantis for going after companies like Disney simply because of their politics, because I find it a little bit petty. So I have moral consistency. I don't know if this person at Menon_C does. Let's see. Margot called me a snowflake. Okay. Eric said, it's different when Democrats do it. Apparently so. Let's see here. What else we got? Seahawks, go woke, go broke. Ken says, keep calling them out, Brandy. The Seahawks need to issue an apology. I don't think necessarily the Seahawks need to issue an apology. I think just the Seahawks need to explain why they're inconsistent on this and why, for instance, a Democrat can post what she posted on her campaign Facebook page, but Tiffany Smiley's husband, who's a war hero, can't appear for 2 seconds in the jersey that you gave him. Again, protect your brand. I just think that your fans deserve to know whether you're protecting the brand consistently, and if your answer is just, we like this candidate and not the other, just say it. I mean, just say it and be honest and live with the consequences of that. Charles says, Cruz is a bottom feeder for sure. She's irrelevant. Oh, is that why you're commenting on my Twitter page, Charles? Let's see. Tim says, Twitter is like a different world for me. Tim says, grow up. is that the best you've got? Referring to my criticism of this Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Hawaii being able to wear a Russell Wilson jersey, but apparently Tiffany Smiley's husband not. Anyway, that was kind of more of the same on Twitter. Sometimes I just, when I want to feel good about myself, I actually go read Twitter, because the sad comments from like people who have a cat as their avatar cheers me up. All right, that's it for this episode of Undivided. I will say, we have a really interesting show for you coming up on Wednesday, a subscriber-only episode. We've been talking a lot on the show about the disastrous, what I believe is a disastrous bill in Washington state that has drastically limited when police can pursue a suspect. And I think it's led to the degradation of law and order. Well, the chief architect of that pursued bill, Representative Jesse Johnson, is going to join me for an in-depth conversation about why he stands behind the bill and what he has to say to people like me who are critical of it. So make sure to catch that interview. To do so, you got to become a subscriber on Patreon or Locals, patreon.com/undivided, or become a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. Undivided is presented by our founding sponsor, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.